I see finally that we're about to begin. So we can start the recording. My name is Richard Harbridge, and I'm here to talk about a really long title: When Should We Use SharePoint Out of the Box, Add Third-Party Apps, or Build Custom Solutions? Now this, I just want to set expectations for a moment. This is a very bold title from someone who represents Microsoft at the conference. So I cannot tell you exactly which tool, which vendor to use, especially in this type of forum, for every scenario that you might be running into. But I do hope that through the session you're going to get some really good feedback, ideas, insights, and a lot of confidence and clarity. I'll come back to that, but I just want to set the expectation. I cannot answer all your questions here. So that's why the second screen experience, let me show it again, especially now that we're recording. The second screen experience in Yammer is really important. You can go to SlideShare and comment on it if you'd prefer. It's uploaded to SlideShare. If you also want to do a Twitter, I don't care how. You can use LinkedIn. I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn. I have a lot of connections on LinkedIn because I love it. It's my favorite social tool externally. So whatever you use, just contact me, follow up, because I can be much more specific when we're in either a one-on-one or a smaller conversation, right, where I can actually have time to process and give you specific guidance. Thank you for the pictures. Yes, you guys rock. All right. Another thing that I just want to highlight, before joining Microsoft, I've been at Microsoft for about a year. I spent about 8 years doing SharePoint stuff. So that's from a practice lead perspective, running SharePoint practices at multiple consulting vendors. I also worked in a large enterprise or two where I was that SharePoint super person that's doing all the SharePoint stuff under the sun, right? So we all have lots of things. Now, what I've learned through all those different experiences is that there are some things that kind of from a level setting that people make mistakes on, and I want to share some of those experiences with you today. And then lastly, just so you know, there's a bunch of other stuff on SlideShare that I've shared in the past, so if any of this seems interesting, please feel free to use those. And a lot of people ask me afterwards, one of the biggest questions is, you know, is the slide deck available? And the second question is, hey, can I use your slides? Can I use anything, really, from your blog? I don't care, to be honest. The only thing I'd ask, you can use anything in any of my slide decks. All my slide decks on SlideShare should not be PDFs. They should be full PowerPoint with the animations, videos, whatever it is that I put in there. You should be able to download those. The only thing I ask is that you attribute, and the only reason I say reference, that something maybe came from me, is because if they have questions or follow-up, it kind of helps, right? Because I might have updated something or had a newer slide or something like that that can add value. So our goal today really is expressly this. What I find is when people are faced with the discussion of when should we build on SharePoint, when should we use third-party products, which third-party products should we use, how do we evaluate third-party products, how do we determine the right way of building on SharePoint, these are challenging things, and they're frightening for a lot of people. And so when we run into this challenge, we often take a step back and we say, I don't think I want to deal with this right now, right? It'll be somebody else's problem. Or, you know, you come to this conference and you're coming because you have a need, right? You have urgency, you have stresses and tension in your own systems and your own work. And so my goal is not to get rid of all that stress, but hey, make you feel a little bit more confident, right? More confident in which choices make the most sense at the right times. And I want to give you a bit more clarity. You know, what are other people doing that maybe you can emulate? And lastly, I want to give you a bit of a sense of direction. But again, we've only got an hour, maybe an hour and 10 minutes, right? So it's going to be a pretty fast-paced session, and I'm going to try and hit you with a lot. So we're going to talk about four things in the session. Now, this may look like a small number of things, but I tend to talk a lot, so we're going to really dig into a couple of these things, and we're going to come back out. So I'm going to give you a high-level overview just to get you started on these things, and then we're going to come into each one, dig into them, and at the very end, we're just going to make sure we're all in agreement that these points that I'm making are hopefully true. So first, I'm going to prove to you, and I'm hoping that you understand that solutions matter, and solutions are really important. The second part of that, which is also important, is that solutions have attributes. They have specific things that make them more sustainable or more successful. And I'm going to give you some hints on that. Then we're going to talk about why this is so difficult. And that requires a ton of understanding. It's very complex. There's a lot of things between the SharePoint ecosystem, SharePoint itself, the technology that you invest in your own enterprise, and then the process in which you kind of go through to make decisions for building and buying and things of that nature. Then we're going to talk about building solutions. We're going to talk about user-driven solutions and IT-driven solutions, which is just a naming convention I'm using. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's expressly true for you. And the importance of knowing when, right? When should we use one, or how do we take one and kind of improve upon it? And lastly, we're going to talk about buying third-party solutions. And, you know, the hint here is questions are really critical. And there's a bunch of reasons why that's critical, so we'll talk about that. Sound good? Awesome. I like the nods, especially on a Thursday. All right, so why do solutions matter? First of all, I love graphs. This is a fake graph. So just so you know, the numbers there don't actually mean anything because I'm Microsoft, right? So I want to make sure you don't take these numbers and go, oh. All right, but here's the point. What happens is everyone here is here at the SharePoint conference because you want to learn more, you want to improve yourself, and you want to be better than average, right? I want a bigger raise. I want to become more useful in my organization. I want to become more invaluable, and I want to do more. And the way we do that is that we stand out from the rest of the implementations or the rest of the types of SharePoint environments by doing unique things, right? We do things that are extremely valuable for the business. They add a lot of business value. And you know what the interesting thing about this is? They all share something in common. They're all solutions. Solutions are how you propel yourself from being, hey, somebody who's doing well with SharePoint, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way, doing well and you know making sure you're getting some value out of it, it's great. But what if we could take that and go way above that and really get a lot more out of SharePoint? We've invested. We have the platform. Let's really start to build business solutions. Let's really start to build IT-driven solutions. Let's really start to integrate SharePoint with other platforms. And you've probably heard through the sessions of the conference lots of ideas around this, I hope, at this point. If you haven't, there's lots of video recordings if you've been partying too hard. So we all want to be better than average. Does that seem fair? Awesome. So the key point after we determine that solutions are really important is what type of solution or what are the attributes of a solution that make it more successful or that allow us to sustain, right, this level of excellence, right, this level of being wickedly awesome, as they say in Boston. So solutions should be rapidly deployed and easy to update. Now, we're in a positive space because SharePoint actually blends with this really easily, right? This idea of, hey, we can typically, and I'll give you some examples later, but whatever we build in SharePoint, most of them have an easy update story. Most of them can be rapidly deployed. And so this is helped by SharePoint, but we also have to be mindful of it. Because if you're building a solution or somebody else is building a solution and you have visibility into that and it doesn't really meet this need, then you're going to have a problem down the road in sustaining that or really getting the full level of success you could get out of that solution. Make sense? Cool. Here's another one, and this should be really obvious, but the biggest differentiator, I guess, for SharePoint implementations right now is if it's not available externally, right, if I can't go through SSL or some other method to my SharePoint intranet or something like that, then how limiting is it when my solutions that are built on SharePoint can't be accessed when I'm at the coffee shop, when I'm at home, when I'm at another remote site, when I'm at a customer site, when I'm at a partner site, and so on and so forth, right? So it's important to have a model where when we build our solutions, we ensure that they're available anywhere at any time, because then it changes the number of times that we can interact with those solutions and get value from it, right? We have a much bigger window, and there's a lot of benefits here. Solutions also need to work on any device. I mean, this is 2014. Solutions should work across all devices. The reason for this, and this is just a slide. Who knows what the slide is, actually? Who knows what these pictures are? Yes, the announcement of the Pope in 2005, the announcement of the Pope in 2013, right? Huge difference. And this is just one example. I could show you the Olympic pictures. Huge difference between last Olympics and these ones. And I'm not just talking about Canada winning curling and hockey and all those other things. It's okay, I also am marrying an American, so we have a household feud. So solutions need to work on any device. So when we think of devices, what I'm really talking about here is understanding that people work in a variety of ways, and sometimes they work on a variety of form factors. And I'm not saying your whole solution holistically has to work on these devices. I'm saying we have to think about when we build solutions or we look at third-party products or whatever it is that we're doing, that we're understanding that this is not a trend that's coming, this is happening now. And so we have to be very mindful. If we're not going to do it or if we're limiting features and other capabilities, let's just acknowledge that, understand it, and have hopefully a roadmap or something else if that becomes more important to be able to deal with it. I'll give you a quick story. I never really believed that people really do a lot of productivity work on their mobile device. I joined Microsoft, and we actually have, you know, my Windows phone has Office and all that on it. And I was like, I'm working at Microsoft. I should at least try and be, you know, productive on my mobile device. So I'm at a dentist office, and I'm on link call. And on the link call, basically, they're talking about an Excel document. And I'm trying to avoid basically saying, yeah, I can update it, because I know for the next few hours I'm going to be in this dentist appointment. I'm not going to be able to be very responsive. But what I instead decided to do is, while they were talking, I switched, because I can run multiple apps, I switched into my office, grabbed the document from SharePoint, right? I made it two updates. It's just a couple nominations that I had to do for some partner stuff. So I did those nominations. I clicked save, basically saw it process, waited a little bit. Okay, it's done. Come back to the link meeting, say to everyone, hey, everyone, by the way, I've updated those nominations. And it basically stopped the meeting for a moment because everyone was talking about what should we do and how should we, and I said, it's all solved. Just use that moving forward, but I have to jump off and go to this dentist meeting. And what was interesting is, while that's a very simple productivity scenario, it could have been a workflow, right, and I'm doing specific tasks, I'm just trying to give an example, but it really does make a difference, because the difference in this case is it would have been hours, maybe even days, to be honest, because that was a weekend, before I might have been able to get that task done, because if after I go to the dentist office and I get back out at like 6 or whatever o'clock, I'm not going to go and I love work, but I'm not always going to go and be available to do my work, right? So being able to help people be successful when it, you know, the right time, just in time, right? That becomes really important. Now, there's also this really critical factor, which is how many people feel like they're ready for today's demands? I just talked about a couple big things. Who feels very confident that they can handle all this right now? So like two people in their audience with hands. So we have to figure out, how do we get ready, right? Now, there are a lot of ways to do this. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to highlight one. And yes, I work for Microsoft, but I'm really saying you want to be on the latest, because if you're not on the latest, you're basically working around all sorts of challenges to be able to accomplish some of the things that I mentioned and a lot more, right, that we didn't have time to cover. So it's really important to be on the latest. Now, there are tricks to getting on the latest, right? You can use Azure. There's a great Telenor case study where they did dev and test, and they built this. They're a huge organization, right, telecom. And they basically had this very large farm. Up to 80 servers is basically what they needed, right, to be able to do dev and test and basically upgrade their farm. So they built all that in an Azure, which saved them tons of time. It was much faster. Then they took all that, and the goal is to pull that back on-premise, but they're still, you know, they're debating because, hey, it's working in Azure. Another scenario I've seen is where someone says, we're going to do DR, right, SharePoint DR in Azure. That's a great idea. And then it goes down, and they go, why are we pulling it back on-premise? Just keep running it in Azure, right, for other benefits and scenarios. So that's one way. You could use different models to really speed up, get rid of time it takes to process and purchase servers and blah, blah, blah. But you could also just say, hey, I'm going to move some workloads strategically, like OneDrive for Business or social or collaboration-based sites, so growth, right, when you have a lot of new sites that people are creating and team sites and things like that. We're going to move that to SharePoint Online. So we'll have a hybrid scenario, and this is how we're going to deal with it. But that way, we get the latest and greatest when it comes to these things, and we can build some solutions up here and use these features, Power BI, whatever. But at the same time, we still, you know, we're not completely reinventing. And that's speed, right? We want that because it helps us accelerate, meets the demands faster. So the outcome here is, and hopefully we all agree on this, SharePoint solutions, whether they're IT-driven, whether they're business-driven, SharePoint solutions are really how we get the maximum value out of SharePoint. This is the big differentiator for organizations. And I gave you some ideas of what really makes a solution more sustainable and more successful. So these are the big ones. One of the ones that I didn't focus on, because it would be a long discussion, right, is adoption. When we build these solutions, you've got to make sure that obviously it's adopted. But adoption is a really interesting subject, because when you build a solution for a fit-to-purpose scenario, the key with adoption is not getting adoption initially, it's sustaining that adoption. And you cannot do that unless the solution is being updated and iterating, unless it's available anywhere, and unless it's available on any device. Does that make sense? Because if we don't do these things, no matter how amazing the solution is going to be, it can't be used everywhere. I feel limitations, right, and other challenges in order to access it. So let's talk about some other things. Right now, we talked about why solutions matter. I hope everyone agrees. They are really important. I've given you some ideas around that. Let's talk about why this is so difficult. This is probably the fun topic, right? Why is this so challenging with SharePoint? Well, one of the things is when we look at build and buy, a lot of times people say, well, there's pros and cons. And I could talk to the slide, but I'm not going to, because this should be really obvious. And everyone who's ever done a build or buy decision inside of an organization, which is pretty much everyone who's ever existed, right, in IT, we all know that there are tangible benefits from buying, there's tangible benefits from building. And a lot of those are risk-related, right? So there's different risks when I build, and there's different risks, or less risk potentially, when I buy, but different risks, right? Risks around how sustainable is this, what's going to happen, do I have control and influence, and so on and so forth. So what I'm really going to say to you is, while this is cool and you can look at the slide, and I have some other slides in the back of the deck that have some other, you know, pros and cons and building versus buy, this doesn't necessarily work because it's too simple. And when we look at SharePoint, it's not this simple. So let's dig into why it's not so simple. The first one is Microsoft. We have a lot of technologies. This is not even close to all the technologies we have. If I put Azure up here, there's an enormous number of services and offerings within Azure, right? If I put 365 up here, there's a whole lot of, new features and other things coming. We have OneDrive for Business, which is a new SKU. We have Power BI. If you haven't seen that, you know, and really played with it, you know, it's one thing to see the presentations, play with it. It's unbelievably accessible when you use a Power BI preview, how quick and easy it is to get those natural language Q&A stuff working. So we need to understand the needs of the organization. So, hey, who's a business analyst in this room? Who's a person that does business analyst work but doesn't have that title? Yeah, lots of us, right? Pretty much everyone. So when we're doing this, we have to understand the needs. And I'm not going to talk about, you know, BA 101. We need to understand our needs, but then we need to map that as best as possible to the right technology. I'll give you some examples of where this becomes challenging, but one reason it's challenging is because we just have a plethora of technologies available to you, right, that integrate well, and we have different options. Let's talk about those options. SharePoint itself, we can have on-premise, we can have online, right? So when we think of online, we have different opportunities available to us, right? We have different features that might be available. Same thing with on-prem, right? There's still some very specific example scenarios, but again, there's differences in capability. And so when we match our solutions and our needs, they might be different, right? Our limitation on beyond 2003, how many people you don't have to be on 2003, how many people have a 2003 farm still running? I can tell you this is a very common thing. Don't feel like you're alone, but you know, this is one of the things that are going to impact your decisions. Another reason this is really complex is we have versions, right? Historically, we've had versions every couple years, and there's a big difference in capabilities between one version and another. And so you have to reevaluate, what is this technology really good for every time you get like a new version, right? There's more opportunities to meet your needs with the technology, I hope, right? If we're doing our job right. At the same time, this is really challenging when we look at online, right? Because we're releasing things, the number of updates is unbelievable for Office 365. If you haven't looked at it, you can actually, there's a wiki and it says, here's all the updates. And each month there's like a big list of stuff that they change and they update and add. So keeping up with that is also a really big challenge. We also have the challenge of licensing and additions, right? So one version of SharePoint, if we're looking at on-prem, is different. If we're looking online, S1 versus S2, or E1 versus E3, and so on and so forth. But there's different capabilities available to us depending on the way we license it and everything else. Does this make sense? So this is part of the reason why it's so challenging with SharePoint. Another big reason, this was a quote from the keynote earlier this week, there's more than 3.4 million developers. I think that's all in Office. Don't quote me. If Jeff is in the room, I don't see him. So whatever this number came from, I'm just speculating that it was Office and SharePoint. But what's actually happening is we have this huge plethora of people that are building solutions on SharePoint, using SharePoint, building apps. And Office is, and I'll come back to it, Office is also a big part of this strategy, right? And we don't want to ignore Office. We also have a huge number of partners in the ecosystem. Now, this data is 2 years old. There's way more than 4,000, trust me, because I manage part of this inside of Microsoft. There's an enormous number of partners in the ecosystem, and they all have different capabilities. We have great consultancies. A lot of those consultancies are now building products because they've done many implementations, and it's not as challenging to take all this great work they've done with Company X and then build that into a wonderful solution. We have a ton of ISVs that say, we know that there's a gap in SharePoint. Our customers are telling us there's a gap in SharePoint. We're going to solve that gap, right? This ecosystem is a great way of actually finding out what are the, and challenge is a strong word, but what are the opportunities in SharePoint where it doesn't quite do everything you might want, and they can maybe fill in that last mile. And then, of course, there's a lot of products, right? So even if we know who the vendors are and we know who our favorite consultants are, we still have this other issue, which is there's so many products, how do I really compare and contrast them? And again, I'll come back to that in the later section, but I just wanted to highlight why this is so challenging. So SharePoint's part of an overall enterprise technology plan. The last, and this is, in my opinion, the biggest one that a lot of people forget about, you know, you have other investments. How many people in this room are using something else for their public-facing website? A lot of people. Hopefully that changes over time. How many people in this room are using something else for document management or records management, you know, specific structured file sharing? Wow, so look at this, right? So this is a common thing. So when you have other investments, there might be times where the process or the way people work, it's better to build it closer to that, you know, in the ERP system or the CRM system or the, you know, the other document management system, right? So you're going to do that. You're going to make those investments, build those solutions there, because that's, you know, that's another reason this is challenging, because you have your own. And this is unique to each individual organization, right? This is why it's so difficult for me to say this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't, because you have your own investments, you have your own technologies and other things in place that really influence whether or not SharePoint might be the right solution based on your needs. Now, another reason this isn't quite simple is that this kind of looks like, with the pros and cons, that we can just kind of make a value decision, right? Kind of a Boolean choice, yes or no. But there's actually a process that goes through this. And it's not, do I build or do I buy? What actually happens is we kind of flow through a process. So let's say we understand our needs perfectly. We're the most amazing business analyst in the world, and we have a team of several thousand people to work with our 20 people in our organization, because then we can really understand them and cover them. And so what we do is we say, we have the capability to solve. So we know their needs, and we know expressly that this is the way we can solve them, and it's using all our existing investments, whether they're SharePoint or otherwise. So what do? Easy choice, right? You just reuse your existing capability, solve the problem. But here's what happens, right? We have some of the capability to solve this, but we're not certain where we're going to get the rest of it. Do we build it? Do we buy it? Right? So this simple assessment framework becomes more complex. Right? What happens is we make it a sort of simple assessment framework, and we add another layer to it. Right? So we have something out there that matches our need. Maybe it matches part of our need. Right? So that becomes another challenge. But let's say it matches our need perfectly. So can we achieve the capability faster through purchasing that product than building it ourselves? And then it's basically a compare. Makes sense? Pretty straightforward, right? But unfortunately, this isn't always how it works, right? Often, we have something that meets our need, but not quite. You know, there's some other constraints, there's some capabilities it doesn't have. And so we have to explore a different opportunity. Are there pieces that can be purchased? Is there a co-developed opportunity? A lot of vendors are really nice, right? They want to take your feedback and build those updates. What's that timing? Is that going to be too long? Is it faster for you to build some of that on your own? Can you integrate it? Can you take two products and meld them to achieve the same result? And so on and so forth. This is where it gets more and more and more complex, because now we're talking about interfaces, manageability, our security needs, is the solution scalable, and so on and so forth. But it's a process, right? What we're doing, and it's not trial and error, we're just flowing through, right? We're saying, okay, can we do it? No. Okay, let's try this. Can we do it with multiple? Okay, no. And so on and so forth, right? Process, not a Boolean choice. Cool. And yeah, we can keep doing this. And just for sake of time, I figured instead of making a slide that's really, really long, this is really the core stuff that you need to go through, right? So you can reuse this from a process perspective of the key considerations. But here's a big point, and I think it's hard because we get so stuck on when to build or buy, and when is chronological, right? It has there's a clear answer, sooner, later, right? Today, tomorrow, right? There's a bit of definition around that. But the how we do it, and how we might even buy it, that becomes really complex very quickly, right? And we get uncertainty on the how. We might know when we need it, but it would become really challenging to understand, well, how can we build it, or how can we buy and build and combine these things so we achieve the results when we need them? So I wanted to just highlight the how is important. I'm going to talk about the how in the next two sections, right? So we need to understand what we have, right? What our investments are in technology, and we have to understand our needs, right? But we also need to reevaluate constantly. I've worked with a lot of organizations, and I'll tell you, one of the biggest dangers is that you get used to knowing what SharePoint can and can't do, and you say, okay, great, these are the things that we look at third-party ecosystems for, and then the next version comes along, you upgrade, right? From an infrastructure perspective, we're on the newest version, and all of a sudden, we're not changing our mind. We're not looking at what is this all capable of? What else is now available to us? What new capabilities are here? Or what new capabilities have been released online that are very accessible to us? Because it's actually quite easy to start consuming some of these online services in an on-prem world. Right? There's ways to do hybrid and other things like that. So you want to reevaluate constantly. And again, the big reason this is important is anytime you feel like it's self-evident, right? Anytime you're like, it's obvious that we shouldn't do it this or this, just check yourself. Because often you might be missing that there's some other opportunity out there. A vendor has already built it. Maybe you looked before, you know, you explored that ecosystem. There was no vendor that could solve your specific need, but now maybe there is, right? Again, this space is constantly changing and shifting. And conferences like this are a great opportunity, by the way, to do that. So we understand SharePoint, we understand our technology, we understand the ecosystem, that's a lot. But if we do all that, then really what we're doing is we're working through a process. Now we have to get into building solutions and buying third-party solutions. Now there's a how and a when element to this. I want to really talk about the how, because I said that's really important. So when we talk about building solutions, we have to understand that there's kind of two ways that solutions are driven, right? We have user-driven solutions. They may be developed by users. They may be owned by users. I don't care who develops it. It could be a third-party consulting firm that comes in and does stuff. As long as the users are owning that solution, the value and all the other things that it provides, that's, in my opinion, a user-driven solution. Because when it comes to updates and when it comes to exploring other things for that solution, it's the user or, you know, business. If you want to change business to user, that works for me. So it's those people that are doing that. And then we have IT-driven. Let's dig into the user-driven. This is really important. The main point of implementing SharePoint, excuse me, is that it eventually allows business users to implement solutions without IT's direct involvement. So when this isn't realized, right, when an organization doesn't realize that SharePoint's a lot like Access and Excel and all these other services, in fact, these are services in SharePoint, right? When we don't realize that it's really about enabling solutions without IT's direct involvement, what happens? Anyone have an idea? Cost of ownership skyrockets, right? Because if IT needs to own every solution, you can't be successful. And you're not going to be that, remember that earlier, the graph, right? The companies that are doing really great, really extreme success, you can't get wildly successful if you're doing that approach where you're doing, you know, IT owning everything. So there has to be enablement. Now there's governance and there's a lot of techniques for this, but remember too that a core part of IT's benefit here is you understand the technology and you can be a champion for this. So when users build or business builds these really good solutions, you can be involved in that story, you can showcase them, you can share them, you should have these types of things going on in your organization. There's a lot of ways to do it. And by doing that, at least you're tied to it so that you know when the solution becomes too highly adopted or starts to run into issues around scalability or IT needs to step in to really take over for the solution because it's really outgrown, you know, the capabilities of the user or business to drive. Make sense? It's rock. Now, how many people were in Scott Jamieson's session before this? All right, a couple. There's a lot of people, I was one of them, if you put me about 2 years ago, when they, 3 years ago? I don't remember when I did previous stuff. When 2013 was coming out, and I saw that everything was called an app, I got confused and worried. Does anyone else have a similar experience? Wow, that's a lot of people. So I think now, and this isn't because I work at Microsoft, this happened before, I think this is actually a really good thing. Because when you think about it, when I build a document library, I mean, even simpler, when I add a column to a document library, I add metadata, I've built a solution. That metadata does something for me, right? It solves a business need. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. And if people are filling out that metadata, it definitely solves a business need. And I'm probably going to extend upon that. You know, if we think of like a great example of this is if you think of a business process, right? If I want to take a business process, the easiest and best way to start is start simple. Just have a metadata column that I add that has different stages, right, or states. So I have documents in a library, I add a column, and it basically says, you know, for contracts, we have a bunch of statuses for those contracts. There's no workflow. I'm just literally changing the metadata, and that allows us to create views, that allows us to understand a lot of things, and it gives us direct value. After that, maybe we add another layer of complexity, right? The easiest way to build a workflow, the most successful ones, to start off with notifications. Because it's simple, right? You just take the process as it goes through these stages and you do specific types of notifications. Really easy to do with SharePoint Designer, right? Not hard. Or even some of the out-of-the-box workflows can do some of this. And so we do that. That's our second tier, if you will, of complexity. And then maybe at that point we start to go, oh, hey, well, maybe we should do like due date reminders or we should add further and further and further complexity. But it's this gradual build of solutions. From the user side, this is how it works, right? They come up with something simple and they iterate upon it and iterate upon it. If the users say, we want to solve everything, and they try and start with these bigger solutions, that's where they go, IT help, or it fails. Right? So we want to be very iterative on the user side. We want to support them in that. And I like apps because it's helping people understand everything you build in SharePoint is an app. And you know what? A lot of people surprisingly understand that apps have maintenance, that apps have a sense of ownership. Right? I built that app. And so that's a good thing. I want to enforce that. I want to encourage that. I want to foster that because I want you to own these. When you build that metadata column, I don't want it to go stale, right? I want you to own getting people to fill it out or whatever it happens to be. I know I'm using that example a lot, but you guys get the idea. People build lists to solve problems. What I'm actually highlighting in this slide is users are making a decision on when to build in one technology or another. This is happening today, right? If I'm a user and I know Excel, because who doesn't? Excel's awesome and everyone uses it. And I know SharePoint lists because SharePoint lists are awesome and everyone should use it if they're not. So if I understand these two things, then I'm making a decision sometimes when to use Excel and when to use SharePoint lists. And maybe I take that further and I say, there's times when I use Excel surveys versus SharePoint surveys, right, and so on and so forth. So the users are making decisions on when to build and how to build. And we want to empower them. So there's training, there's guidance, there's things that we can do that can really make this build or buy piece for the users much easier. Now let's dig on to the IT side, because I've got to speed up a little bit. From an IT-driven perspective, we have a really critical point with SharePoint. It's extendable. It's actually really easy to build on SharePoint in a variety of ways, whether they're through the web UI, right? Whether it's through SharePoint Designer, whether I'm using InfoPath, yes, you could still use InfoPath, whether I'm using Access Services, whether I'm building Office apps, I'll come back to that, whether I'm building SharePoint apps, right? It's valuable. And another thing, if you're on-prem, it's really valuable because it integrates with a lot of technologies. If you're online, it's an obvious thing because it's already integrated, right? If you think of a lot of the capabilities of Office 365, the story is a blended story, right? You saw that in the presentations and the keynotes and other things at this conference. So just like we're doing that online, you should be doing that on-prem. And you know what? Microsoft is going to obviously really try and tie Microsoft products together, but it's unbelievable the number of external products or competitor products, even if you want to look at it that way, that are building tie-ins to SharePoint, or they're building tie-ins to Office, or they're building tie-ins to things that help you as an IT group really get more out of your SharePoint investments. So when I talk about this, the first thing people say to me is, Richard, I get it. We build all sorts of IT solutions. But we run into this challenge, which is, when should we build in SharePoint? When shouldn't we? And this is really hard, by the way, to talk about, because I could have filled up 20 slides with this, right? So I tried to just pick a couple examples that I think are pretty easy to get. The biggest one here is the top one, right? If you're building a solution on SharePoint, it has to leverage or benefit from SharePoint. So if you're thinking about it and you're like, hey, I want to build a solution and it does this and that, if there's no benefit whatsoever from SharePoint features and what SharePoint does, build it in .NET, build it somewhere else. Build it closer to the user if you can, right? If you're building it because that's where the user is, fine, right? Then maybe that's a reason to build into SharePoint. But you have to have a reason to build onto SharePoint. Don't just assume, you know, everything, you know, hammer and nail analogy, right? Everything when you have a hammer looks like a nail. Don't assume that everything is a SharePoint solution or should be a SharePoint solution, right? The second thing we have to talk about is Office apps. And I like Office apps because I think some people say, cool, great opportunity, but I don't really understand what it really means from a business perspective. So I'm going to try, and this is really, again, a challenging thing, I'm going to try and simplify the story around Office apps and just talk about the value of an Office app. So this is a user, right? So Shayla is here working in her Word document. And when she's working in her Word document on contracts, we'll take contracts or invoices. Invoices is a fun one. So she's working on an invoice. And so what does Shayla do with this invoice at some point? She's going to process it. She's going to do things with this that are business related. So she's going to go to the browser. She's going to use that browser to navigate to different line of business applications. Inside those line of business applications, she's going to interact with services, and those services are going to return information. And there's a bunch of steps here. And what actually probably happens is she copies and pastes content from Word. She's doing all sorts of stuff that basically requires additional redundant steps and also slows down the process. And so when I talk to Shayla, she's not happy, right? She's not as happy as she could be. So the idea of an Office app, and there's many variants of this, right, is that we can, there's still sometimes browser, right? A lot of these are web-enabled. But what we want to do is we want to basically say, look, we can simplify this, right? We can allow you to interact with services in ways that are closer to where the user works and that enables less redundant activities like copying and pasting, right? I can select this, and then they have the app inside of Office interact with that context, right, that content that I'm working on. And so that's really the value of Office apps. So these are good, and there's times to use these over SharePoint, because SharePoint is one of those line of business applications in a lot of times, right, when people go to it. So again, if the users are working in SharePoint, if you're all really successful and everyone's in SharePoint every day, probably not a lot of you, right, then we want to start figuring out how do we use Office apps to really enable that. And maybe it uses SharePoint services, workflows, and things like that in the back end, right, but we can have a better integration story. So Office apps make sense, and don't ignore those. If the data should not be stored in SharePoint, now, there's a lot of scenarios for when data shouldn't be stored in SharePoint. I'm just going to pick one, because I think it's a pretty prominent one. Should we use database tables versus SharePoint lists? Has anyone else experienced this question, right? So the intrinsic idea here is SharePoint lists are powerful, right? We have all these features in a SharePoint list, so if we store the data there, we get all this stuff for free, basically. But it has a cost, which is, hey, it doesn't always scale the way that we might need it to based on many-to-many relationships and things like that, right? Many-to-many, just to give context of what that really is basically saying I have, what's an example here? So customers have invoices, and invoices have products, and so on and so forth. And because these have many, it becomes more and more challenging to do that with SharePoint lists, because SharePoint lists, you know, a lot of the features that allow you to do those types of relationship complex operations, they're not as powerful, right? They're not as capable, and they're certainly not as rapid. There's also the key point here that a lot of people, when they get into this conversation, they say it's one or the other. And by the way, this could have been something else for storage versus SharePoint, but they go one or the other. And again, hybrid opportunities often exist. Maybe you take part of the workload or part of the solution, and that gets scaled out, you know, in a different scenario, and then SharePoint lists are part of the solution as well for maybe that more common stuff or where the features of SharePoint become really valuable. One of my favorite, so these lower ones, these four bottom ones, these are examples. So a lot of times when people say SharePoint lists over databases, they say, well, one of the benefits of a SharePoint list is we have edit and data sheet. We can do bulk update, right? Copy, paste, boom. I've got all my content in there. But we can also do that with Access. And Access Services, if you haven't seen it in 2013, right, and the Access Services, say, in SharePoint Online, it's really powerful because it actually uses Azure SQL, right, as the back end, and those are tables. So we can actually have database tables and still have bulk importing. And by the way, when you import stuff into Access, let's say we do this method. I take a big Excel sheet. I copy the content. I paste it into, I'm going to call it a dumper table inside of Access. I paste it into this dumper table. I can have data macros that process that data and put it in the appropriate normalized database structure for me. Right? So there's ways to kind of get a hybrid where I'm using some of SharePoint, because Access Services is part of SharePoint, right? But I'm getting the richness and power of, say, SQL. If you've been to the Access sessions, I'm sure there's a lot of other great content around that. And that solves the workflow, right? When do we use workflow or not? Search is another one. Can we index external data? Yes. So search is one of those ones where it becomes a little bit harder to really say that it's really important for that data to live in SharePoint versus somewhere else. It is harder to do some of these indexing and refining and building a better, more fluid interface, but certainly it's not an all or nothing, one choice or the other. And ease of use. Forms is a big one here. I decided to avoid that because there's been enough forms topics. So I'm just going to use the views. A lot of people say, hey, I like storing my data in a SharePoint list because the views allow me to filter and refine and do all this cool stuff. Well, you can do that with Excel. And if you haven't been doing a lot of cool stuff where you grab data sets and data sources in SQL or in another database table or in SharePoint, and you start to blend those in Excel with Power Pivot and other things, you know, data connections that are synchronizing and you can schedule, you're missing out because Excel is an amazing reporting engine. It's an amazing way of getting these filtered views. And it has Excel Web Services, and we have other ways that we can pull that in, especially with Power Q&A, which is coming and actually is out, right, for everyone who has that opportunity to explore it. All right, so we talked about if the data should not be stored in SharePoint. We also have to talk about when there's a better fit to purpose. So based on timing, I'm going to kind of summarize only one story here, but just understand there are many stories with ERP. There's Azure stories, right, where we're going to do Burst and maybe genome sequencing, who knows, right? Stuff like that where there's other technologies that are just better at doing it. So my story here, this is the link to it. I was working with an organization and we were implementing solutions on SharePoint. And the head of sales, the VP of sales, came to me one day and he said, Richard, I really want to be able to share contacts. I said, oh, can I do you a favor? I can build you a contact list in SharePoint today in 3 seconds. You can go use it. Your teams can use it. Everyone's going to be happy. I'm a very opportunistic and optimistic person, right? So he goes off, he starts using the list, he comes back to me a day later and he says, Richard, this is great, but sometimes when I have these contacts, they have an address that's a headquarters address that's different than their address, and we need to mail to that and do other things to that. So can we have some sort of like headquarters or address? Oh yeah, absolutely. We're gonna create another list that's gonna be address, headquarters, things like that, and then we're gonna have a lookup column, right, in a relationship. So let me build that for you. He says, great. So he disappears. 3 hours later, he comes back. Richard, this is great. We filled all this cool stuff out. He says, Richard, what I really need from you now is I really need you to add an extra column. I saw in HR, you know, they had this invoice type and whatever. I just need a type. I want to have a type of contact. I said, oh, we can do that. We can create a type. In fact, I've been doing this for you. Let me show you how. Let me teach you. So I showed him how to build a new column. You know, it's a choice column. Here's how the different types work. And these types ended up being opportunity, lead, account, right? You guys are probably seeing where this is going. So he goes back. He comes back 2 minutes later. Right? The sequencing and the time where I'm getting pressured from him is increasing. The nice thing is, this has a happy ending, right? The nice thing is, I realize we're building CRM inside of SharePoint. And this company, this VP of sales, we were deploying dynamic CRM. It's just that it was a 6 month to a year process. He bought into it. He bought the licensing. We were deploying CRM, and he's building CRM because we need it now, right? So, okay, I don't say no. I don't say, okay, go, you're screwed. This is not something we're going to do in SharePoint. I say, okay, there's a line in the sand. Once we reach a certain point, we should stop, or we should ensure that this is very easy to pull the data and all the work that we're doing and import appropriately into CRM. That's number one. And that's working with a CRM team and so on and so forth that's implementing that. The second thing that was really important was I said, there's value in the conversations we're having now around what matters to you, what metadata matters to you, what is your sales process, how are people going to use this? One of the best ways to get great analysis on needs is to just give someone something and then help them build it so it's better and better and better, acknowledging not that it's a throwaway, but that we're going to be able to take this data and all this work and make it valuable, right? You know, as a pilot versus a throwaway. And so we use that. This whole SharePoint process was a pilot where we took all this great, content and ideas, and we worked it into the CRM. So when CRM came out, it wasn't an adoption issue. People knew the value of having systems of sharing, right? A lot of collaboration and other things that CRM really helps with. So that was just one example. There's a lot of these, right? There's times when it makes sense to build in SharePoint, and we have to be aware of what are the workloads and scenarios that make sense in SharePoint, what are the technologies we have in our organization, and sometimes it does make sense to do at least some of the legwork in SharePoint because it's so iterative. There's such a low cost, right, in terms of effort, that, hey, we can at least understand your needs a bit better and use that as an exploration tool. All right. So I gave you some ideas of when to use SharePoint, when not to. Hopefully that helps many people in this room. So to summarize, we talked about user-driven and IT-driven solutions. I want to show you two quick matrices to understand some of the benefits that Microsoft has. Now, I realize some of these might not be able to be read. So what we basically have is we have end user and casual developer and power user and full-time developer. We have solutions based on, you know, your expertise level. And expertise level is a catch-all term, right? So there are people, you know, here's a fun one. This week, I'm pretty sure it's public. There was an 8-year-old boy in Boston, which is where I'm from right now, an 8-year-old boy that basically built an app on Windows Phone. It's a successful app. It takes a bunch of aggregate content around, I think it's like cartoons and stuff. Really cool, right? And it's working, and he's built it. 8 years old. That's insane, right? There are people in your organization that are very smart. And some of them are already in your organization. I'm not saying new hires. I'm saying there are people in your organization that all they need is to just understand the tools and the capabilities that are available to them, and they'll build magnificent and beautiful solutions for you. Or they'll help you build great pilots, not proof of concepts, I don't like that term, pilots that we can take and graduate into real full-blown solutions. All right, so that's one consideration. Earlier I talked about solutions. There are attributes that make them very successful and more sustainable. So let's look at some of these attributes and the way that we build on SharePoint. Because I said that SharePoint actually does this pretty well. Well, SharePoint out-of-the-box apps, they're easy to improve, right? I can actually deploy them in a lot of places because I can save, you know, lists as templates, I can save sites as templates, I can do different things like that. It works across devices, you know, especially if we're on the latest, again, it's important. It's basically, if we're online, it's available anywhere, I hope, unless you have firewall issues or something else, which, no, resolve that. We have SharePoint apps, we have Office apps, and so on and so forth. Now, each of these have some considerations, right? There's times when it may not be as available and accessible and able to meet all of these needs, or your need for the device may be more complex than maybe what's outlined, you know, in the default capabilities. But I am going to suggest that this is one of the reasons, from an IT perspective and from an end user perspective, it's good to build on top of things like SharePoint or Office, right? Because we have a platform that you're building off of, and that platform is going to help you achieve a lot of these things that allow it to be more successful, more sustainable. All right, so I talked about that. It's awesome. SharePoint's awesome. Yeah, thank you guys. Sometimes it can be easier to start simple to validate needs. So there are times, even when SharePoint's not the right platform for it to live in long term, at least we can use it to validate and identify needs. So I'm cheating and I'm saying SharePoint's good for everything, but there's a point where maybe it needs to go somewhere else. All right. So we talked about a bunch of things here. Hopefully you guys feel confident in this message now. Now let's talk about buying third-party solutions. The biggest thing to know when we look at buying third-party solutions is that we have to understand our needs, right? And one of the most interesting ways to identify needs is to ask questions. If you find it's difficult to come up with questions, this is a broad statement, if it's difficult to come up with questions, then you probably don't have a full understanding of your needs. And sometimes asking open questions and other things can help you really ground what it is you really need, and more importantly, maybe what someone else can provide to you. So let me tell you a quick story. This on the right, wait, yes, right for you guys. The thing on the right, this is the sales pipeline, right? 101, this is how people sell. On the left is basically a flow of questions. This is the magical flow of how you actually ask questions and you come to assertions where you have trust but verify, right? You know that this is true. So if I look on the right, if we look at qualify, baseline questions are actually the ability for you to say, this is what I believe I need, what can you do, are you the right type of person I should be having a conversation with, and so on and so forth. So it helps not just you, but it helps them, right? And you cannot, just to be clear, at baseline, you cannot compare. You cannot take three vendors or three products and do the comparison. You need to dig deeper. Because if you don't have a developed solution, if you haven't seen their solutions, if you haven't played with it, proof, right, done a bake-off, it becomes harder and harder to do that comparison. Does that seem fair? So we want to, just like on the left, we want to dig deeper into these questions. We also, on the right, this is how these companies work, right? And this is what they want. They want you to do these things. It's not like they want you to just go, yes, buy our product, because you're not going to be successful. Your expectations could be way off on what that product can deliver, right? So it's in everyone's best interest to flow through that. And I'll come back to questions at the end, by the way, when we have time. We can go through some other Q&A, and we can talk maybe a little bit more about how to approach this. So if questions are really important, Richard, tell me, how would you buy a third-party product? Or how do other companies do this, right? I said there's a lot of companies that I've interacted with, and this is the way that they bought that I like and has been very successful. I will tell you tons of failures happen when they don't flow through this and they don't ask questions or enough questions or deep enough questions or they don't do a proof, right, and actually play with it, right? When those types of things happen, often we're not as successful when we buy third-party products, right? So, we identify our needs. To do that, we have to have a scenario, right? So I'm going to walk through, there's other scenarios in the back of the deck again, in Yammer and SlideShare, and if you just come up to me, I can give you a USB. You know, there's other scenarios in the back of the deck. I can only talk about one because of timing, so let's talk about SharePoint migration. Because I think that's a really popular one, right? Everyone has a need to migrate. Hopefully everyone, who's on 2010, 2007, 2003? Yeah, that's pretty much everyone in this room. Migrations are great, right? On-prem, oh yeah, we need to go to the online. Cloud is great, right? All right. So buying the right migration tool, we identify our needs. There's a whole lot of stuff around needs analysis. Then we determine, by the way, this is some of that stuff around needs analysis. You cannot read this, I know, but if you're looking at the Yammer deck or you download it yourself, this is basically a typical flow to migrate to Office 365, which is the scenario we'll use for example's sake. So if I'm migrating to Office 365, this is the needs, and there's a ton of stuff. There's steps, right, in understanding our needs and really understanding how that maps to it. So let's say we understand our needs. We need to know, can SharePoint do this? Do we even need a third-party product, right? Do we have the capabilities here in-house, or do we need to go somewhere else to get them? Well, in fact, SharePoint doesn't really have practical options for migrating, right? You could do some cool tricks. You could save things as templates. You could do WebDAV or open with Explorer, right? We can drag and drop files. We can even map drives and drag and drop files that way. But the problem is we lose metadata and permissions, and the list goes on and on and on. So this is, realistically, this is not a practical way, unless you're a very small organization, to do a migration. Does that seem fair? So we need to go outside of our own technology investments and look at third-party products, or we need to look at the ecosystem. So what type of product would meet our needs? By the way, we could build our migration solution, which I haven't talked about here, but let me just say very clearly that you don't want to build your migration solution. So this scenario is actually very easy. We want to go with third-party options. So what type of product would meet our needs? Well, I said earlier, there's user-driven and there's IT-driven solutions, right? When we build solutions, we have both. Believe it or not, typically, well, this is a bit harder, typically, vendors, they work the same way. They target users, or they target IT, or they make it so that the positioning and the way that you deploy and utilize this technology is going to be working core on one or the other. Sometimes they blend. And migration is a great example because, you know, there are products, and again, I can't name them, unfortunately, on the stage, but I can tell you afterwards. There are products in the vendor hall that are amazing, right, that do a really great job on PowerUser, and many of them do also a great job on IT Pro. So in migration, we don't have to choose one or the other, but there is definitely a difference between one migration vendor and another, the ones that are more focused on PowerUser versus IT Pro, as an example, for the pricing, the feature sets, the way that it rolls out. And some vendors have both. They have a targeted scenario for both, right? So I just want to highlight that there's a classification that we need to go through to really understand who's going to own this. Migrations need to be owned. Is it going to be jointly owned? We need a tool that can kind of support both. Is it going to be power user driven? I shouldn't even say power user. Is it going to be user or business driven? Okay, then we need to have a tool that's really going to support that core scenario and so on and so forth. Then we have to figure out which vendor. There's a lot of vendors in that expo hall even here, right? And that's not all of them. There are other vendors that do really great jobs on SharePoint migrations. So when we look at vendors, we have to ask questions. Again, I don't want you to go and grab and write down all these questions. Again, the slides are available. You can access them in three different ways. I've highlighted those enough. So just know that there are questions you should ask. And these are questions that are true for every single scenario. If it's a permissions or governance scenario I'm discussing, if it's a workflow technology product and I'm looking at third-party options for that, again, these are the questions I would be asking, right? Because this helps me understand, you know, if I take something like how difficult is it to manage and administer the product, I understand TCO and I understand, like, what am I really getting into when I buy this product? One of my favorite ones on here that I think a lot of people for some reason ignore is what are other people doing with this tool and how's their experience been? And every vendor should be able to connect to with a customer that they have that's used the tool and has hopefully had success. It's in the vendor's best interest to do that, right? And can tell you how they worked it out, what challenges they ran into, right? You all have probably used different tools. Should connect with each other afterwards. Do a quick 30-minute call, share, right? Help each other understand what worked for you, what didn't, what vendors you've found useful that maybe you haven't explored because you didn't realize that was a gap, right, that you had in SharePoint. And so there's an opportunity there. How do we compare? This is a hard one, right? We can do bake-offs, but the key with even bake-offs, right, when we have one tool and another and we're testing them and so on and so forth for migration, is we have to have the right questions and we need to know what are the things we should be considering for this tool over another. And so the nice thing with migration, and this is a cheat because I did this 2 years ago or whenever that was, where I came up with all the questions with the help of Portal Solutions, and we created a whole lot of questions. So there are literally hundreds. Let me quickly alt-tab to it. So there are literally hundreds of questions in the appendix of this little white paper, and the link is in the deck. So, you know, copying SharePoint content, there's a lot of questions we need to ask around that. Can it copy between lists? Hopefully, right? Everyone should be able to do that. But what about very unique things? Like, hey, can it copy master pages and branding assets? What about if we go a little bit further and we start talking about flexibility, right? So let me keep going. Like I said, there's a lot of questions in here. So does it allow us to remap content types? Does it allow us to take folders and convert those to metadata? And how does it do that? And so on and so forth. Now, you may think, I don't even know. I didn't know that that was going to be a consideration. When we migrate, why would we want to take folders and convert that to metadata? Oh, well, there's lots of benefits and reasons to do that. So asking these questions or even just exploring these questions helps you understand what your needs might be or where you might have assumptions or you might just not understand a need before it hits you, right? Before you're in the middle of a migration, you go, oh, we need to be able to do this. How are we going to do that? So I've basically given you this one. So it's nice and easy. And if enough people say, I want questions for something else, I or the community or someone, we will build that for you. So you don't have to come up with all this stuff on your own, right? The only reason I created this was because a couple people kept asking me the question, and I'm really lazy, and I don't like to keep sending emails and stuff, so I just published it, right, with the help of Portal Solutions. So keep that in mind. So we ask a lot of questions, and when we ask these questions and we get further and further down, and we do proofs and we see it, now we know that this is the right solution for us because it meets our needs. And we know our needs because we've asked those questions and so on and so forth in a magic circle. All right, so we purchase our product after getting awesome discounts because we all deserve discounts, never buy anything at full price, right? We get something cool. So I wanna share a couple resources. I was gonna put this in the back of the deck. There is other stuff in the back of the deck, but I thought these were really important. So I wanna walk through a couple with you when it comes to third-party tools. The first one is that Microsoft has a site called Pinpoint. If you're looking for services partners to help you, this is one way. There are many ways to find services partners. Many of them are in the hall. Many of them do talks. Many of them are very reachable, and you can just reach out to them through internet, right, through Bing search or however you end up doing that. But this is one way to do it. And this is not just the partners that do, say, services, but a lot of the partners that have applications or build solutions. They're available in this list. So this is one way of discovering, because one of the challenges is just navigating that ecosystem, right? If I don't know, then how can I even take advantage of opportunities that might exist by utilizing some of these vendors? SharePoint Reviews is probably one of my favorite sites of all time. So Ina Gordon and the team works really hard on this. This is a community-driven site that lists all the SharePoint products that exist, really, and gives their best chance. It's hard, because there's a lot of them. They try their best to try and give you an idea of, does this work? How does it work? What are the constraints of the solution? Does it work on this version? And so on and so forth. A great way of navigating the ecosystem. This is more powerful the more you contribute to it. So if you're not contributing to it, then you're not going to get as much power out of it. So again, my imploring message is use it, consume it, but also try and share back, right? Give a little bit back if it's helped you. And it could be a great way of exploring those solutions. The Office Store is also a big way of doing this. If we look at the Office Store for Office apps, or if we look at the SharePoint Store, right, when we look at the apps for that, these are ways that we can look at many of the applications that are available. Now, I will say that this is something that's maturing, right? The reality is there are solutions out there now, but there's more and more and more on the way. And so as more and more solutions come, we turn into more and more taxonomy development from a Microsoft perspective, and we help you navigate that better and better. So this is one of those things that's going to constantly change, but it's something that you shouldn't ignore, right? If you don't even look at this to get an idea, because even if you're not going to buy and use these solutions, it gives you ideas of why would someone build that? Oh, maybe that is something that would be useful, right? Maybe that's something that we have a need for, or at least is in the back of your head, so the next time you're working on a project or you have a need from a business unit, you go, wait a second, I saw that somewhere, right? And you look at these three sources maybe to find it again. Analysts and customers and consultants are great, right? They're great. You can ask another customer, you can share ideas, you can ask consultants. Consultants work with many customers, so consultants have a lot of experience, they have a lot of exposure to different products, they have a lot of exposure to build versus buy discussions. And analysts have actually quite a bit of interesting insight into this. Now, if you go to Gartner and you go to Forrester and you go to the bigger analyst companies, they're going to have a ton of interesting stuff around SharePoint, but it might not be as deep, right, when it comes to, you know, specific SharePoint add-ons, because, you know, from a coverage perspective, they may not be as deep. But keep in mind, there are other types of analysts, right? There are a lot of smaller firms that might have a bit more context on when that is. Or you can use analysts to really understand, you know, strategically, is SharePoint the right platform for this type of workload? Or strategically for our company, should we go with some other product, right, that exists from Microsoft or some other great vendor out there? But we have to be careful. Because all those three groups that I talked about, analysts is a mixed message, that's a bit harder to talk about, but customers and consultants, and we all know consultants are biased, right? I've been a consultant for many years. I try not to be, but you have to be, right? You can't help it. Because you work in SharePoint all the time, you love SharePoint, so it's going to be, a lot of things are going to look like SharePoint's the right solution for. And if we look at customers, a lot of them are biased because their experiences are going to be different, and their interests might be, quite frankly, different from what your interests might be, right? So you have to keep that in mind. But don't let this stop you from reaching out to lots of people and getting different feedback and experiences. Because doing this buying decision on your own is a terrible idea. Because even when it's biased, it still gives you ideas of what questions to ask. And I said questions are really important. All right, we've landed this message enough. We're really close to the end, which is good because I'm running out of time. And I want to have time for a Q&A with us. The hardest part is finding the right questions. And the biggest thing, and I'm going to reiterate it because it's really important, if you're struggling to come up with these questions, it means you probably don't fully understand the need, or you haven't fully taken the need and really done an analysis on it, right, to be able to form the right questions. All right, so what are the big takeaways? Let's walk back through this real quickly, and then we'll kind of finish up and do some Q&A. Why do solutions matter? Because they help us be differentiated. It helps us be extremely, wildly successful. And it helps us, if there are certain types of solutions, we can sustain that. Now, why is this so difficult with SharePoint? Well, SharePoint is a complex platform. The ecosystem for SharePoint is complex. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of developers. There's a lot of consultancies that are building applications and so on and so forth. There's a lot of customers that are also building them, right? And so that becomes a bit of a challenge. From a building solutions perspective, we need to understand that we want to leverage the existing investments we have. So we want to build on top of that wherever possible. And we want to build as close to the user as possible. We want to be as simple as possible to start and then increase in complexity. And then finally, it's really important to know when, right? When should I build on this platform or that platform? What's that line in the sand, right? To go back to our previous example. And then, you know, this one, I think this one's actually really easy. When you look at third-party products and you look at buying and things like that, you want to do two big things. Ask a lot of questions and get help. And that help can be in many forms, and I've shown some examples, but you want to do that. And if you do that, you'll be way more successful when it comes to buying and finding the right solution, the one that's more sustainable or the one that's going to meet your needs better than if you hadn't done that in the first place. So our goal today was to create a bit of confidence, clarity, and direction. Have we achieved a little bit of that? A little bit? I'm seeing good nods, so awesome. Thank you, guys. So at this point, I will accept your adoring applause. You guys rock. And what we can do is we can do some Q&A. Again, I'm just going to quickly show you. There are some slides. I didn't just make that up. You know, this is a risk one that ticks about it. There's some scenario stuff where you can get into permissions, blah, blah, blah. There's some cool stuff in the back of the deck, so make sure you download the deck. But we have time for questions. What I'd love to have, if you're really bold, to go to the mics. But if not, I'll just repeat your question. So who's going to put up their hand first? No one has any questions on Build or Buy? I had an amazing session because apparently I covered everything. Stand up then, I can't see you. Oh, perfect.
It's not a question about Build or Buy.
Sure.
It's more of a question of, we want our users to
have more power. So the question that was asked is a good one, and it's saying, hey, we want to empower users, we want to enable users, but sometimes for governance reasons, for risk mitigation, and for other things, we've disabled certain controls or capabilities. In this case, it's SharePoint Designer, right? Maybe SharePoint Designer is not available to all users, and so, you know, what's the right way of approaching that problem? And what I would say is, at the end of the day, there's a way to roll out, especially SharePoint Designer, where we have so much control, right? We can actually change this site, this area, this can be used, and that can't be. That we can actually roll out something like SharePoint Designer in a very responsible way that empowers people. But if you're going to do that, there has to be a sense that people are going to adopt it and use it. Because rolling out a tool where it feels like there's no need might not make a lot of sense, and there might be increased risk. So it is a difficult question to answer, but what I will say is the majority of organizations that don't roll out SharePoint Designer, and I'm boldly stating this, should, but they should do it in a controlled way. And there are ways to do this in SharePoint where you can say, hey, in this site, you know, this is a very important site. You know, it has high, important, critical information. And so the disaster recovery time and everything else has to be certain, you know, SLAs. But, you know, this other content over here doesn't really matter. So if you want to use SharePoint Designer in this environment or this space, go ahead. But in this space, maybe not, right? Personal sites is a good example of that. Certain team sites, right, where you don't need to control it because there's less risk. Or it's in SharePoint Online where there's a lot of controls already in place. So there's really, it doesn't hurt you if Microsoft has to deal with it, right? If they interrupt the service somehow with SharePoint Designer, which I've never seen, right? So keep that in mind as well. Any more questions? Oh, awesome. Right. So the question was, in this case, you're using Nintex forms and workflow, and there's a lot of capabilities there. It's a very rich platform. So if we're doing that, who do we roll it out to? How do we roll it out? How do we do that in a way that's going to be more successful? So simple is good, right? So the less you roll it out may not achieve the same level of success, but you can be more directly influencing the results, right? If it's more manageable. So I don't know how large your team is. I don't know the constraints of your business. Okay. So in an organization, what I would basically say, you know, the short answer to this is you want to roll out the capabilities, in this case the workflow capabilities, to people who have a need for it. So there's different ways of discovering need, right? And a lot of times, this is a big gap. A lot of organizations don't do a good job of looking for needs from an IT perspective. They're reactionary, right? I'm IT, you say you have a need, and now I'm gonna react to that, right? But there's lots of proactive methods from feedback loops, from surveys, from other things, where you can identify who might be good candidates for that, or you can be really clever, and you can actually create like a softer offering, maybe not all of Nintex because you don't want to pay all the licensing rights, but maybe some piece of it, and you roll that out to a broader set, and then you see who sticks, right? And then you can kind of pull back and so on and so forth. So there's different approaches to this, but the key point is if it's reactionary, it limits the number of ways that you can roll this out successfully. The more proactive you are, the more armed you are with information, then potentially the better your targeting scenarios are and the better your adoption is going to be. You had a question? Oh, no worries. You can just shout it. This is my favorite question. Thank you for asking it. So the question is, I'm going to reframe it in my words just because it's easier to answer my own question. So basically the question is, if users are building apps, because honestly IT is pretty manageable, I believe, unless your organization's crazy. So if you have users building solutions in any form, how do we ensure that they're maintained, managed, they don't sprawl, and so on and so forth? This is a really big challenge. Let's pick something that's not even SharePoint related. Let's pick something fun, right? So if you think about it today, I said there was an 8-year-old who built like a mobile app, right? In your organization, there are people that can build applications, right? So in IT is, and this isn't new, IT is becoming distributed from a skill set within the organization, right? So business units have somebody who's technologically savvy, who can build solutions, whether they're in Excel, Access, SharePoint, what have you. So if the business is building these solutions, we have three challenges, right? Number one, how do we create visibility that this solution exists so we don't have repeat people building solutions without at least building on top of what somebody else has done, right? Or collaborating to learn from each other. So showcases are really important. The SharePoint store and the mechanic of what SharePoint store represents, or the Office store, right? That store concept is a great way of showcasing these solutions, but it requires potentially a little bit of evangelization. It requires a little bit of proactive IT investment to find solutions, discover them, catalog them, and potentially enable other people to use them. So store is the kind of the end all where you can actually deploy it and utilize it. The in between is basically having a showcase where all we're really doing is saying, Department A, here's a screenshot or two. They built some really cool color coding on a calendar in SharePoint or something like that. So look, this is cool. Do you have this need? Go check, right? And IT is pointing to that and the users are pointing to that. So when people come to this, they don't go to IT first. They don't go to Phil in IT. They go to Shayla who built this app, right? And they say, Shayla, how did you build that app? Tell me how can I extend upon this? And you have more people owning it versus an individual or a single contributor, and so it has a much better sustainable strategy for that solution. But I will tell you, this is a problem right now because we have all these cool SharePoint apps. How do we decommission them when people stop updating them, right? So we have a date that the app was last updated, and that becomes really important metadata for us to track. Right? And there is a point in time where we really should decommission certain apps because they're not as reasonable and responsible. Same thing with content, right, and everything else. So that governance and that flow becomes really critical as well. Hopefully that answers some of your question. Any other cool questions?
If you decommission an app, what happens to all of those sites?
So the question was, if you decommission an app, what happens to the sites related to that? The key is, when I say decommissioning, that's a process. That's not me turning off access to the services, let's say, that app runs on or something like that, right? So there's a process, and depending on the type of app, because there's Office apps, there's SharePoint apps, there's a lot of types of apps, there's a different process potentially of how you decommission it. And it also, to be honest, depends on, you might not be decommissioning everywhere, but you might decommission maybe new uses of that app, right? Because maybe there's some other alternative, and so you can redirect people when they go to that showcase page or in the store, you can kind of say, well, look, if you're looking at this thing, this is better for you. Go try this one, right, as an example. Cool, I like these questions. More? All right, well, you guys can come up and ask questions if you'd like. Thank you all for your time.